Man, Reel 10. We're talking about the crossing of the Volturno, which was obviously done under enemy fire, and the wounded coming back. Again, this would be one of the early experiences of you seeing wounded men, and I think you said you helped them off the boats.
That's right, yes. Well, dressing on, of course, the clothes were torn, and that where they'd have to apply a dressing and that, and the dressings were just covered in blood, because they'd either have to put the dressing on themselves, or being helped by one of his comrades, we'll say. One of the stretcher bearers come, they didn't really put the dressing on. What they would do, if they had it available, was morphine, and they would give them an injection of morphine from the capsule, and then on the forehead they would put the letter M in blood, or in the man's blood, and to notify that it had been given morphine. They would also put a T on the forehead if the tourniquet had been applied. I mean, oh no, this is later on, I was stretching there for a short while. But there's a T for tourniquet. If I remember right, you had to release that between 10 and 15 minutes. Just let a bit of blood flow through and then tighten up again. There were some nasty sights. Sounds.
Did you have time to reflect upon those sights? Just too busy.
I think under the conditions of that, although it was early days of being in the action area, it more or less you just accepted it, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, somebody watching me might have had a different opinion, but from what I can remember of it, you just sort of accepted it, part of the day's job, as it were.
What were the response to the various wounded people coming through your hands at that time? Were they panicking or quiet? What was their response?
I think you just mentioned a couple of things there. I think someone would come through with a lot of them were pale, of course, which is understandable. Shocked. Others were just quiet. In fact, even getting wounded wasn't sort of to say safely getting out the area, because I can remember when I did a bit of a stretcher there at one time, the Germans were even sniping at the wounded on a stretcher, bringing them out. But the wounds, of course, varied. The majority of them were small arms, from machine guns or rifle butts, or mortars as well. But with the rifle wound, that the majority of them were just pierced straight into the skin, different places. Machine gun, of course, you could get a number of bullets into you. For an example, there, a pal in the Oxen Box, who was still have contact with the daily, got 17 bullets in him off a spander, and that was from the ankle up to his stomach, and it took part of his stomach away. Was a very bent, crooked leg, which is still weeping even to a couple of months ago when he was up here and down, and still having treatment for that.
When you picked the wounded up from the riverbank, what happened to them? Where did they go?
Well, picking up either the stretcher bearers, or if you were detailed to stay with somebody you were wounded, which usually you weren't, because you should shout out stretcher bearer and they'd come forward. Stretcher bearer would, well, put him on the stretcher and then get him down to the regimental aid post, which was the first aid post with the medical officer in it. And that could be in some sort of an old building. Whatever, there was nothing hygienic about it. It was a old building giving a bit of cover. They were put in there, the medical officer would tell them. I don't remember cases where there was one chap in particular, he was dead on the stretcher, and the MO got to him. And although he had dressings on him, they had been wounded. He'd been wounded in the back, and it had never been noticed. So he just bled to death on the stretcher. But as I say, we'll take to the RAP, Regimental Aid Post. and from there ambulances would come up from further back and take the wounded away from there. When they could get up, and they had got up for a few hours, you might say, if the action was that heavy, couldn't get through it. And then they were taken back to other aid posts and eventually shipped away to hospitals.
What happened to you next after they crossed the Volturno?
After the battalion got across, there was a bridge put across the river, a pontoon bridge, a boat put into the river and plank or some of the things stretched across these boats to make a form of bridge. But no, they did dry draw the metro up to 1500 weight across there, which was a bit wobbly, of course. Anyhow, I got across all right.
Was it under fire as you went over?
Not at that time, no. No, they were a bit further up there. But when we got across, we came into a place called Capua. And it was from there the battalion was pulled out of the line and were relieved. And then Capua were put into a big grounds again, which apparently had belonged to some prince or somebody. Italian prince. And they were under a massive mansion with like stone steps going in a circle almost up to the mansion itself. Big trees. And that was the rest period until they went back in action again.
What did you do in a so-called rest period?
Well, the rest period was the equipment was all checked, whether you had any shortages or anything. Equipment of wounded or dead personnel was put to one side, sorted out. From there, if you'd been in action, while your equipment had to be dulled, the brasses mudded over a blank or other. The stupid thing, I suppose, it was in one way, come out of action, your brasses all had to be polished up again and the equipment had to be scrubbed. And for the first couple of days, when you come out of the action, you were given more or less a rest period. There's no duties. You were given a cooked meal, of course, which you didn't get when you were in the foothold areas. And just given these couple of days to pull around. Nothing when you come out of the line as well, they had showers rigged up close to the area. Back and transported in the trunks, of course, and we had a shower, strip off at one end of this massive marquee, a big tent. All went in showered. And when you walk out the other end, you were just given clean clothes. Not necessarily new ones, towards the being laundered and that. And your old clothes, of course, they were just left there, get laundered again for somebody else to do. With any equipment missing, well, you could take it off equipment that was laid and being sorted out from wounded and persons who had been killed. So all the socks were piled up together and that, the personal belongings were collated, and eventually I think it was the padre who did most of that with the personal belongings. But if you were short of socks or that, you could help yourself and so this year, resume with three pair of socks under this year. You could get as many pair of socks as you wanted then, if they were there, or another jacket, or trousers, whatever it was, or shirts. That's just from this equipment.
Coming out of action, out of the line, what's the most important thing that a soldier is wanting immediately?
Well, immediately I would say rest.
That's just sleep, is it?
Yes, one sleep. Because if you were in a slip trench, which I was later on, that was a slip trench, there'd be two slip trenches, as I explained. When it comes to, say, night time or dusk, one of you would try to just drop off or sleep and the other one keep awake. Only natural, of course. But say, you couldn't say, I mean, all right, if it was dry weather, the trench was dry, but if it was wet weather, it was mud all around in your trench. Would you just crouch down and try and get a bit of rest? Well, at the same time, you think you hadn't had a shave or anything, and there were no ablutions on the trains or anything like that to go to. You were just in that trench there, and you had to put up with it. If you wanted a cigarette, see, they used to reckon a lighted cigarette, just the glow at the end could be seen a mile away. So what you would do would get your ground sheet, a gasket, which you hadn't, crouch down into the trench underneath that and have a bit puffer, you know. Probably ended up like full of smoke underneath, and then you'd want fresh air. Well, that's what I used to be. But as I say, that's what I wanted. And then, of course, a hot meal, which you couldn't really get in there in action. They used to issue you with a tablet, I should say. I could explain it. It was maybe about 2 to 3 inches, not 3 inches, over 2 inches across, a round tablet, about half an inch thick. It was known as a mess tablet. And that would go between a piece of tin which would fold flat and open to a cross, and it would go into that, and you could put your mess tin on the top, put your water in and warm that up. So you could have a hot drink even if it was just water. You didn't have bags of tea with you or anything like that. You could warm it up, or if you had a tin of M&V, it's amazing how you could get all of odd tins of food and that when you were out of action at times. And very, very occasionally there would be something hot come up by carriers at night time. Used to carry them up. But mainly with this tins of M&V, you used to put in big containers. And if the weather was very, very bad, you would get a bottle of rum sent up, which was for the platoon. These are filling out with it, and there's some of them that didn't touch the stuff, so all them off and all the wood. You would get that when things were really bad, but weather and that.
The weather at this time where you were wouldn't be too bad, but it'd be in the summer, and you think, or the autumn.
Yes, the weather was deteriorating because, I don't know, just before it was after the boat turn, and now there was a place called Rocamonfina, and it was in a forest sort of area, beginning to get hilly area. Well, just before the boat turned or after, and we were in action then, this chestnut area, and the weather turned, and it did actually start snowing, raining and snowing real, and then of course the mud started, come out of the land, this Rocamonfina area, was where Bobby Todd, one of the nine who went with me to the auction box, he was killed. What had happened is a jelly actually threw a grenade, it landed in his trench, and that was the end of all Bobby Todd. But then we come out of the line there and went to a little village close by. We're all dripping wet, soaked to the skins. And it was a case of get under cover. Once we had the police, and there was one chap with me, and we got into an old house, and just a real old lady in this house, put it more like a hovel it was, but it was dry, the small just stone built surrounding it and that, and she had like a frying pan with holes in it at the bottom, and she put in there chestnuts, which had been out of this forest where we'd been up in the line, and she roasted these chestnuts over a little wooden fire. Remember, we had them to eat, and then we just kept down for the night. We'd taken our wet clothes off, and then she said she would dry them up in the smoke stand there. A good three converse with her. And blankets had been provided, so there was two or three blankets. And next morning when we woke up, because it was dark, we went to this house, and in the morning when we woke up, dear me, up the wall it was covered with black scorpions. And this is where this little old lady was living, and all she was living on was chestnut, which we saw later in a small yard, a big pile of chestnuts where you'd normally have a pile of coals, would say, or something like that.
Whilst we're still talking about being out of the line, was mail coming up each day, or did you not get that until you went into rest?
No, mail would come. You never got mail actually up in the line. Of course, it went in the line. You didn't have any other identification apart from your discs, which was identification disc on the neck. Any mail that comes, you see, would have addresses on it from your family back home, and all this was the word. But you could come out and you may not get any letters at all at the same time. I think at one time I got about 15 letters, just a few. You never knew when it was coming up. Clopton would come round and it would mail up, and then it would just. It was issued to platoons, and you used to gather round the end. Or they would call your names out and give you mail.
Important to receive mail from home?
Oh yes, it was a good contact. It was difficult to know what to write in reply, because you couldn't exactly say what was happening or what was going on. But it was nice to hear things from way back home. Darlington, well, yeah, I know, of course. You'd had one train come over the town and an air raid once, and the machine run the clock outside the old police station. That's it for that.
But, people who didn't get mail, you must have seen people like that. How did that affect them?
I suppose really the type of life that been brought up in, more or less. You would get mail, and some would say, you know, what have they written about, you know, what's happening back at home, to the same questions like that. But I know there was some that didn't even used to gather around the NCO when they had come up, because obviously most of them weren't going to get any.
Did any of the men close to you, that is, get the unfortunate Dear John letter from their wives or sweethearts?
Oh yeah, that's who they would get that also in ammunition boxes as well. That used to come up, you would get some of the factory workers in England, they would slip a note in with the girls, you see, with a name and address on, and ask if you would write to them. I never got one myself, but this did happen. Put their address in, right, you know. Of course, others would get it, and they'd maybe say, oh, dad's passed away, and mother's passed away, or even a wife or family.
And it was very.
Like hitting them on the head with a hammer, you know.
And to get compassionately for events like that back home, it was impossible, was it?
I don't know anybody who got compassionately from that. You know. No, I can't remember one. I mean, they jumped the gun eventually when I did get home. My mother had a very poor life in one respect. She's always very frail and that. And I said to her, why didn't you try and get me home, you know? At the same time, I don't suppose they would have sent me. But I know that was a comment I made to my mum and dad when I did get home. They should have tried to get me home, but anyhow.
You were at the end of a pretty long supply line for food and whatever that was coming through. Did you experience any situation where that had been looted way back in the lines of communication?
They used, I reckon whether it's true or not, but for every man in the line, they used to be nine more men behind the line, connected with supplies and this, that and the other. were times, of course, when you wouldn't get any supplies up in the line for a day or a couple of days or something like that. Supply used to be brought up by a carrion, we used to call it a carrion party, and it was made up. I know in one case where there were some coloured soldiers, I don't know whether Indian, African or whatever, but they were coloured anyhow. They were a carrying party one night when we were up the line, and they didn't turn up, so we got nothing at all. Neither ammunition, food, and nothing came up. Next night we got supplies coming up. Well, this one was carried up to a point, maybe in some cases, a matter of yards behind the line and dumped it, and then he would go down and collect it. All in the cover of darkness, of course.
Were these the compo parcels, or whatever they named them?
Similar to that, yeah. The water was brought up in like 2 gallon tins, a screwed cap on the top. That was the water, and then would come up tinned foods. And bread, you would get that up at times, or failing that, if there was no bread, you would get hard, we used to call it hard tack biscuit, or it's like a sailor's biscuit. When you went in the line, you more or less got a tin of corned beef between two of you, so one had to carry it. Of course, if the chap got wounded or anything in the corned beef, it was in his pocket, you would take it and put it in your own pocket. Pretty cruel to be kind in one sense, and this is just what you like. Because the other thing, when one's talking about what we were issued with when you joined the forces, which I didn't mention, was a tin about half as big again as a normal sardine tin, flat tin. Every man was issued with one, and it was called emergency ration, and it was a very hard chocolate based compound inside it. You couldn't bite through it. You could suck it and that if you could break it, but anyhow, you'd get through it with your vein or something. Well, you weren't allowed to open those emergency rations unless you were given permission by the officer in charge.
Cigarettes, and they were reaching you all right, were they? Yes, they are an important ingredient, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, cigarettes in North Africa, more so in the African campaign, which I wasn't in, of course. And the cigarette issue then was Victory V. It was a packet that had a big V on the front, yellowy coloured V. And these Victory Vs, where I had smoked them, you could more or less think that there was the paper was brown paper around it. It wasn't brown, but it was classified as brown paper. And the tobacco must have been the sweeping up off the cigarette factory's floor. They were issued in North Africa and at Italy in the beginning, then later came along. You actually got Players cigarettes. Players, Gold Flake was another one, I think, Capstan. But the issue, I know it was, the quantity was 50. You used to get 50 cigarettes issued. But I can't remember whether it was a fortnight or a month, or I don't think it was a week. We had the option of that or a block of tobacco, if you were a pipe smoker. So after the Victory V, though, the cigarettes issued first before the British makes was C2C, which was a South African cigarette, counter Cairo. It was a bit better than the Victory V, but it wasn't up to the standard of your homemade cigarettes.
And you didn't experience these parcels coming up that had been opened prior to reaching you and some of these items taken out?
No, I wouldn't say items taken. I don't think any items were taken out. The only thing was, has happened to me, parcel was sent but never arrived. Both from home and from relatives, aunts and uncles, and that. Later I would get a letter, did you receive? I sent you some socks and some cigarettes, and I had never seen the sight of them. It disappeared somewhere in transit. I never heard. But you couldn't put a claim in this day, you hadn't received it. No, that's good, nice. nice to get a parcel now and then. But mainly it was socks and cigarettes, let's say, not food. I used to get a chocolate sweet ration as well with your cigarettes. But that you have to pay for through YMCA or NAFI services or Salvation Army services.
As well as parcels from your own family and friends in that nature, did you get anything from organized bodies, ladies, groups, or what have you?
I think the worst thing, like pullovers or again socks, of course, which was one of the popular things made by the WVS or Red Cross, something like that. But that was in small quantity because, well, when you imagine, I mean, there was thousands and thousands of troops abroad. And whilst maybe the emphasis would be troops were saving the roughest of it and get a parcel to help them on and that. But they didn't used to come out in big numbers. No. Things would have been knitted back home. Or balaclava helmets was one of the knitted things that would send out here. And scarves. Not scarves, balaclavas, gloves, knitted gloves, and then the socks and pullovers, all the main comfort parcels sent out to you.
You mentioned the deteriorating weather as winter approached. That must have been extremely difficult for you as a lorry driver.
Oh, it was. When I think I mentioned when the mud was setting in before there, the trucks just couldn't move. I mean, you'd mud up to the axles there and you couldn't do anything. No, you would just, a track vehicle would come along and maybe put you out if you were certain position and that, but you were really just stationed by the weather, stalemate. Yeah.
And in the extreme wet and damp conditions, which was a daily thing, did that affect the health of people?
It did, but not to the extent of what you would imagine, I think, because most of us, whilst we were young soldiers, some were a bit older than us, of course, but you could stand the elements in your younger years. I'm sure everybody will reminisce. But, yes, I mean, you had colds, you regularly get colds. I had them myself, I know. That was it. You maybe go sick and they'd give you some sort of tablets to take and that would get through. But you bore up with it. Yeah. That was the bug there, getting wet through and that, you can understand it. Getting cold, nowhere to change into or get dried and that.
And you couldn't really change into warm or drier clothing until you'd been pulled out at rest.
That's true.